This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
All right, well, good morning. It is day four, the final day for the 4F convention. And yes, my voice has not necessarily gotten better, although I had a full night's sleep last night, which meant I missed a lot of parties last night, but I woke up this morning to ice. I'm sorry, snow. What is your joke? What do you say, Dan?
I always tell people I love coming to 4F because it's Batavia in April, late April, where the robins freeze and fall off the trees.
The robins freeze. It rhymes. Yes. Yeah. It's, but anyhow, this was just last night was the night I really wanted to stay up because that's when they really had a lot of the parties. Now, how about I got Christian, who was part of the Christian Catalina team.
And what have I learned after so many years of being here is I now go to bed by one. Because if you stay up for the parties every night, which is easy to do because there's so many fun people, is it takes you now 3-4 days to recover from 4F if you stay up till 3-4 in the morning every morning. And so just go to bed at one and then you're fresh because you can enjoy the day. That's my theory now. Plus, I'm older.
So you're going to bed more and more early, like by soon it'll be midnight.
Tonight he's going to bed at 9.
Yeah.
He's bagging the second half of the show.
Well, I did miss, I know they, after the French show last night, they said we're going to be having a party in room 103. And did you guys make it to that party?
Yeah. I eventually made it down there. I ended up talking with Bob Swaddling for like an hour. Bob Swaddling is one of the great treasures of magic that most people don't know about. Swaddling was one of the mainstays on the British scene for tons of years.
Did he actually invent the flipper coin?
Yeah, he invented the flipper coin, the magnetic shell and insert coin. That's all Bob's stuff. Yeah. And people just don't remember that. But he still makes beautiful coins for Mark Mason. But he has this whole other thing. He and his wife both were great professional acts, and Bob was an amazing manipulator back in the day, and his wife did this beautiful art-based act that worked, you know, the nightclubs in Paris and on television and all over the world, and it was great people. So he was very close with Caps, so, and Ken Brook, so, wow. You know, two of my favorite people, you know, so.
Like Caps. Everybody loves Caps.
Well, last year, yeah, at the TED Talk, you gave a talk about Fred Caps.
Yeah.
And speaking of TED Talk, that was what you and Catalina were hosting yesterday.
Yeah.
And so, so my question was just about when you put that thing together, do people come to you? Do you have a theme or how does that come about?
It's still relatively new. I mean, what was this? This was the third year?
Yeah.
So a lot of people come to us, definitely. I'll occasionally approach some other people, but it's really shaking out because they'll have an idea, but we need to refine that idea. So, because most of the ideas are way too broad and you need 10 minutes. And so, getting them, so one of two things happens. Either I can't get them to focus on 10 minutes. They're just, no, I want to cover everything. You can't. Or we finally get them down to 10 minutes and I feel confident and I say, all right, let's put you in next year. But you also want to mix, right? It's only 4 or 5 people, but you still want maybe a little history lesson, maybe something about actually what I can use in a magic trick or you know, just a texture. You want texture in the talks.
Right.
Well, I think this year was a good example. I mean, you had 5 people, you know, and let's jump forward
to that here if you want to.
Yeah. The closest thing we got to a trick was Vince Mendoza talking about the napkin rose, and he didn't actually teach it.
No,
he talked everything about it. You know why you want to do it, and you know showing his napkin rose, which is amazing, and he did it as he actually does it with a wonderful story. And then flash up this thing. If you want to learn it, email me here and say the secret word, and I'll send you what was a download. I mean, they were selling a download.
What I thought was one of the interesting things that my takeaway from that was we always think of things in the box and the way it's always been done. In other words, you make a napkin roast from a napkin. He uses two napkins, basically. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking, wow, there are other kinds of things. If you start thinking, rather than just using one balloon animal, you can do a 2 balloon animal or whatever it is, you know.
Correct, yeah. And they're not even tissues, actually. Yeah, I mean, he really explored a lot on this thing. Yeah.
And I think the other thing that he brought out was, in the beginning, we think of the napkin roast as something very quick. We want to make it as quick as we can. Here it is, and now moving on. And he changed the dynamic to say, no, it's not something to be quickly made and kind of tossed and moved. but make it a whole presentation, make that a whole piece of the show, and take your time. And I think that's what a lot of people were like, oh, that's totally changing the paradigm of that trick now.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's exactly what he was doing.
And I mean, from a technical standpoint, it takes a long time to make this rose,
right.
But it's really, it's lovely to watch and listen to because he has a really engaging story.
People are more likely to keep that than they are the napkin.
Exactly, it really adds to the value of what you're creating. Nobody's throwing that rose away. Nobody's
right.
leaving
right.
that on the
right.
table.
Well, I think the other napkin rose is something you keep for you know. Half an hour.
The evening, maybe.
Yeah, the evening,
You know, I made one for a bartender, a lady one time, and I came back, and I was doing a trade show in Florida, came back the next day, and she had actually put that behind the bar by the cash register. And I was thinking, you know, as we were talking, she was having a bad day. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, let me see if I can cheer it up. And so I made her this napkin rose. And then she said, well, thank you. And I could tell that she really meant something. And the next day, darn if it was, you know, she'd kept it. It's like, made me feel kind of special.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, the other TED Talks, you know, since we're on the subject, Boris Wild talked about what it takes to compete at FISM. Which, and you say, let's focus on something. How he was able to do what he did in 10 minutes was pretty cool, and he wasn't rushed, and it was just really good advice that as a great takeaway.
And a good PowerPoint presentation,
exactly.
As all these guys had behind them also.
Absolutely, but it's not about, you know, what it takes to compete at FISM. I think it's really how to focus and create an act and look at the difference, the different values of your act that need to be considered, and I think it was a very, very valuable thing for everybody. Rolando Santos, you know, here's a guy who was the head of CNN for Chile for many years and is, you know, he's a journalist. He's been all over the world. And he talked about how to make audience connections and how to make certain what you say evokes things for
people. I really hadn't thought about that either until he had mentioned about how that we are manipulated by, I don't care what politics you are or what channel you listen to, but all news writers, you know, write for the readers to evoke that same emotion. There's a hook that, anyhow, I thought it was phenomenal, you know, a different way of listening and the news.
And he laid out certain, you know, like six key elements that you want to focus on, at least one of these, to make that evocative connection with your audience. And again, you know, magicians need to, you know, look up and kind of go, oh, yeah, you know, if I put that into the presentation, maybe now people will actually like it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, what you could see is during both Boris's and Rolando's is people were taking pictures of those slides. They're like, oh, my gosh, I got to grab that. Although most of those guys make it available somewhere.
Exactly.
But in that moment, people are so excited about, oh, I haven't even thought of that. I got to get a picture. So that tells me they were really getting something out of this when you see that happening in the audience.
Yeah, and then Maria Schweder, Mike Power's wife, who was raised in Bolivia,
which
you
I
never
didn't know.
Know it by her accent.
No, I didn't know that.
Her parents were missionaries, and she goes back every year to work with the kids in Bolivia. And a magician down there has created a magic school. And it's not something that they charge for. No, this is something that he pays for out of his pocket. From, you know, the profits of his show, because he feels it's that important. And they're teaching kids and sometimes even adults. And some of these kids and adults are now becoming performers in their own right that are out there working and stuff. And, you know, she was just talking about, you know, how that came about and what they do and how they do. And she had a video of the fellow who runs the school and had asked us to, you know, consider contributing some, not money, but, you know, a couple of decks of cards, some tricks you have laying in your drawer, like any of us have things laying in our drawer. I brought up a box for her.
Nice.
Gave it to her and said, here, it's for kids. Yeah, it's just helping me clean out, that's all. And the last one was my buddy Mike Siege from up here, called The Happiness Factor. And it was certainly the most unusual opening. First of all, I mean, I've known Mike for years, and I looked over there, what the hell are you going to talk about? But he had some real tragedies in his life in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, the last few days.
Yeah, and he said, so let's talk about the happiness factor, you know, after he tells all that. And really, it's one of those eye-openers. It's not going to change your life, maybe, but, you know, you really need to think about
how you're treating other people.
Exactly, and what you're doing really means to people and the power of what we do, what that has to do. And it was a great last item on the TED Talks.
I think what I liked about his last one is it wasn't just – of course, we all know we got to make the people we're performing for happy. But he was talking about keep in mind the person who hires you, the person who are around them that might rehire you or hire you for another event. And he was talking about making sure everybody's happy with what you're doing. Don't sacrifice something just because, well, this will make me look better. But did it? Did it make you look better? Maybe the person you're performing for, but maybe the person who hired you is like, this guy's hard to work with. So he was looking, he's pulling that focus back to look at everyone and keep everybody happy. And guess what? You'll get more work.
Yeah, you know, a little tip he didn't talk about is something that I use, and I would imagine he does also, and that is I like to take a photo with my client, you know, and as high as whoever it is that's there, vice president or president or whomever. And then I'll put it into a nice frame and send it back to them, and I'll usually do a little Photoshop on the bottom and say what the date was and the event or whatever. And then because it's a nice frame, they usually keep it in the office because it's the people of their office mates. I have found that I've gotten other shows by the same company because some of their higher-ups have come in and said, oh, what was this? And they said, oh, we had a great time with the magician. It reminds them, so we need to get him back next year,
yep.
You know.
Exactly.
Anyhow, so listen.
That's all good.
Let's start for the first of the morning.
Yeah, first event of the day was the annual Papa Page Memorial Workshop. Pat Page used to run this workshop himself, and then when he passed, they decided to keep it going, and Mike Powers took over.
Now, Roger Clowns did it, I thought, first.
No. Did he do the one here first?
I think Roger did and then Patrick took it.
Okay, you're probably right. That's probably before my time. but Pat ran it for a number of years, and every year they pick a theme. This year's theme was Magic in a Minute. So it's tricks that take a minute or less to do. And there was some...
So then let's rush through this then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Michelle Huot, Mark Trudell, Yoni Kalikwa. No, but everybody got up and did a piece. And these were all real doable pieces. Michelle Huot, Mark Trudell, and Yoni Kalikwa, the Montreal Trio, came on together and then they each did a piece. And, you know, there was a trick with a phone charger, real quick collector's thing, Four Coin Production, real nice stuff. Jeff Eline, who's his first time, great, terrific guy from Baltimore, who's also a great musician. He's a great guitar player. He did a pseudo-memorized deck gear routine that was good. Our buddy Gene Gordon from Colorado did a nice multiple-changing card routine. Dave Neighbors, also from Colorado, did a really nice, quick four-coin vanish in the guise of doing a Matrix. Super easy and very, very commercial if you're going to do Matrix. It's a nice little thing to put in there. Steve Friedberg, one of my buddies from my area, did George McBride's George McBride routine where four aces vanish, and it's a 2-3-4 assembly. Nice routine, and he had George's permission to teach it. Derek Finn did a Nick Trost trick that was awfully good. It was a trick that he actually fooled Nick Trost with his own trick, and he changed the theme of the thing completely. It was basically a blackjack transposition. Really nice. Keith Randolph did a production of a bottle from a flat box. I thought the construction of the box was really good. It was a really good idea, but you know, I think it can be there are better applications for it. But seeing the box was nice. Jeff Williamson did his one coin vanish, real simple thing, something we all know, but he has some handling tips that really make this great. And Will Fern did his behind-the-back card trick, which is great, and Will screwed it up because he had Boris do it. And, I think Will learned something, but he knows the ins and outs of this trick, and he knows why it screwed up. But the trick itself is a real good commercial trick. So we move on to Friday afternoon, the Friday Frolic Show, emceed by Steve Beam, one of the funnier MCs that we have here, and Steve has always got great gags. Takamitsu Sui, from Japan, the Rubik's Cube godfather, opened the show with some incredible Rubik's Cube stuff. Oh, my God. The production, the multiple productions of Rubik's Cubes were just outstanding.
The productions really did surprise me. I mean, that just never ended. And you keep thinking, okay, it's gonna stop now. You can't pull any more Rubik's Cubes out of that bag. And he had a stack. He had a pyramid.
Oh, yeah.
Of Rubik's Cubes.
Yeah, out of a bag.
Out of a bag. Out of a little lunch bag.
Out of a bag, and then from under his close-up mat, he pulls out a solid Rubik's Cube. And, oh, it was really a clever routine. And in the course of doing all that, he still was doing the solves and the matches. It's great stuff. And Takamis, I mean, for those who don't know, he is the guy who created the majority of the material that people are doing now.
Rubik's Cubes.
Yeah, the basic systems, and he keeps going with this because I just watched a Penguin lecture he did, and there's like things that people are doing with gimmicks that turtleback thing, you know, that he's found ways of doing it without the gimmicks.
Wow.
That I mean, if you watch this stuff, it's like, oh, my God, he really thought this thing out and came up with some incredible stuff. It was really, really, really cool stuff. Wow. Anyway, Thomas Solomon from New York, followed him, did a very nice ball and cone routine. Matt Baker from Atlanta, who has a brand-new book out, the Buena Vista Shuffle Club. Matt's a mathematics prof at Georgia Tech, and he brings that to his magic, certainly. But he did a really nice, very different version of Aronson's shuffleboard, which was kind of surprising if you know shuffleboard. It's pretty cool. A fellow from China named Zhang Zhenghua did linking rings. And, you know, we're watching this and going, oh, you know, it's a nice linking routine. And then he hands out all the rings.
At the very end, yeah.
At the end. And I'm like.
And they didn't see a switch there.
I saw nothing. I'm like.
And
I mean,
you feel a little suckered because he played it like it was a little, like, how do you say, like, oh, I know you don't think I'm very good.
Yeah, just very pedantic.
Yeah, just, oh, you know, I'm kind of messing this up a little bit here and there. But did you guys, oh, here, by the way, here's, and now you're like, what did I miss?
You just turned the hose on us.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Totally, totally. Yeah, that was fun.
Really hosed. That was good. Christopher Quintero, who I'd never heard of before. Apparently, Christopher took second place at IBM last year. And his theme was like invisible objects. So he turned, you know, like invisible deck cards becomes visible. An invisible marker becomes visible. An invisible balloon becomes a balloon. And it was just some great magic happening in a reasonably short period of time. And, you know, it was just great productions
very
and vanishes.
Polished.
Very polished. Yeah. And stuff becoming invisible. You know, it was turning back and forth, you know, visible, invisible, invisible, invisible. Very polished performance style as well for a very young man. And,
Where is he from?
I don't know what city he's from.
Yeah.
He's a U.S. guy.
I happened to talk to him a little bit. Super nice, and I thought, how come I haven't seen this winning any competitions or anything? Because it's definitely that kind of act.
Yeah,
a competition act.
You think? Yeah, absolutely. But I just never heard of him.
Like I said, he took second place at IBM last year. So. You know, and last year at IBM, we had a Gold Cups winner, so that's pretty strong.
Has he been somewhere else?
Never heard of him. I never heard of him before.
I mean, like, boom, he shows up at IBM, and now here, and that's this act, it looks like it's
very popular.
It was not made up yesterday.
No. Yeah, he's probably competed in regionals somewhere before getting to the Nationals. Chris Payne followed him from England. Chris, again, it's one of these magicians. Most magicians don't know, but he's a former young magician in the Magic Circle. He was also a Ken Brook acolyte, so, you know, we have a lot to talk about all the time. But he did a really interesting cards across routine with two decks, a red deck and a blue deck, and the conditions of this thing were pretty cool. And it was three thought of cards traveling from the blue pack, or sorry, from the red pack to the blue pack.
One guy had blue, another guy had red, and they went across.
Yeah, really nice routine. He was followed by Daniel Hank, a young man from Germany who's very, very tall. And he did a thing with a couple of borrowed decks and the ace through fives, and they vanish and they reappear in other packets. And he had a great gag on Shin Lim's black art stuff.
Oh, that's right.
That was, you know, we're watching this thing and we're going, oh, that's not looking good at all. And he turns over these cards very obviously on the table and says something about Shin Lim.
Yeah.
Very, very pleasant young guy.
Not really an homage to Shin Lim.
No. They were followed. The show was closed by Catalina and Christian, who my wife keeps telling me, you always say the woman's name first, you know. So Catalina and Christian, I told you this morning. I said, you fooled me. It was a very clever, very direct kind of routine. I mean, it's tough to find kind of like new plots. I think that's a new plot.
Yeah, well, thanks. That's it's just an old principle. We played with it, and I think you're right. Sometimes it's just the quick. It's what makes that is not the method. It's the story, the premise that we set up.
Yeah. And it's a good build, also.
Yes,
you know, it was a three phase thing. So.
Right. Yeah, I think and really, this was more for 4F. To just have fun with them, and of course, Gene unfortunately, dropping stuff. And Gene's such a super nice guy. Now he's worried, oh, my gosh, did I mess him up? Did I mess him up? But the trick is so simple, it's almost impossible to be messed up.
Basically, that they're trying to poison some food.
Right.
And then you're trying to decide
which
food
was.
You're
trying to poison me with food.
You're trying to decide which food it was they used to poison.
That's right. And it's all psychology, and that's the path you take them down. And then Kat pulls that out at the end.
And the best part of what really makes it work is your personas and how the structure of the trick plays to your personas.
Yes.
That it's the back and forth between you and Kat.
I was a little too excited that people were poisoning me. It was a little too, like, I'm like, maybe I need to check my life insurance again. What's going on there?
And that's all good. just remember me and your wealth. That's all. You know? So,
then we had the TED Talk.
It was the TED Talk, then the Friday.
Then there's Friday. Okay.
So then there's the dinner break, and they had the dinner here. But there's a group of like 18 of us went out to the Red Osier last night, and we got back a little late. So I actually missed the beginning of the show last night, which was the Gala Francaise show. So it's all French performers, emceed by three Canadians. But they did a great job.
Very funny.
Yeah, the Montreal Trio, very funny guys, had a lot of great gags and stuff. Boris opened the show. You saw it.
I saw Boris's opening. He did a wild card routine where he started with very clever. It was, and he shows everyone. It's a deck of cards, and it's double backs. And he goes, examine, and he tells the spectator, it was a funny line. He even says, I do the whole routine just to say this line. Examine a card and make sure it is indeed a gimmicked card or a messed up card. So he then lays out five of the double backs on the table. Then he pulls out a regular deck, has a woman select a card, and then the five double backs slowly turn into that card. And very, very, of course, as you know, Boris is a very beautiful performer, so the beauty of the movement comes out. And you do have a moment where you're like, okay, I missed something there, but all right. As a magician, you're thinking, I'm going to pay more attention. But you can't. They just keep changing. And at the end, the entire deck of double backers then turns into a deck of 52 of that chosen card. And that's where you go, I didn't see a switch. I need to watch this a couple more times. Boris, could you do this trick again? So it was very beautiful. And Boris, of course, you expect nothing less. He's always such a fantastic performer.
It was a great opener for the French night, since he was a French winner.
Yeah, how do you open with Boris Wilde? You know? Edouard Boulanger, who's been here a number of times, who has a really nice style. It's a very, European competition-type style, very visual stuff with fire and coins and cards. It's real nice stuff. I came in about the middle of the act. He was followed by Alexandra Duvivier, who...
She's brought on to great fanfare.
Quite so. She was carried on in a chair by several guys, which I told her afterwards. I said, I think you need to put that as a writer in your contracts, that you always make your entrance this way. And Alexandra's so charming, and she just has such a great presence on stage. And she did I'm watching the opening thing, the thing with the candy. She brings out a little bag with different kinds of candies and stuff, and she talking about it, puts a piece of gum in her mouth, she's chewing and talking about it. And she puts the pieces back and gets a guy to come up and hold it, and he reaches in and pulls it out, and now she had two pieces of what looked like liquor strings or Coca-Cola strings with all of the pieces of candy strung on this thing like a la razor blades, but done in a bag, and then rips open the bag, and there's nothing in there. It's like, you're cheating. You're fooling us because you're so charming and low-key. And then she
continued with the thing she did with Penn & Teller.
Exactly. CIB, it's called, card and bag. And she nailed Penn & Teller so bad with this. And I was talking to her about it. And her dad invented that trick like 40 years ago. But she never did it until like a year ago. And they sent in the tape, and that's what they wanted her to do on Fool Us.
I think part of her strength is she didn't try to get into the magic fast. She spent a good portion of the time charming everyone. And getting them to like her. And so now when you get into the magic, you're already in, right? Where I think a lot of times guys come to the 4F and they think, I got to hit them over the head with the magic right off the bat. And we never get to know who they are.
Right.
It's kind of like, wow, that was a neat trick, but I don't know who you are, and you're already gone. Where you fully were engaged with her before she even thought about doing a trick. And I thought that was brilliant.
So she was followed by Billy Debout.
High energy.
Well, I was going to say this kid should, you know, they should give him some coffee before he goes on, because he's just laying there like a lox. No. Oh, my God. You talk about high energy. It was over the top. He was just boom, 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 boom with the music.
Techno
and the
music and everything.
Oh, my God. And Billy, he's this diminutive young Frenchman. He looks like he's 12, yeah. Even though he's like 23 now. 20, yeah. Yeah. And his stuff is so rapid fire. He did Matrix, but he did it, I don't know what he had, like 8 different phases of this routine. And it's like boom, 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 boom. And then he's doing card work, and it's this techno, you know, firecracker card work.
The card work he did with his hands, I mean, it was so smooth and so beautiful and so fast. It was just amazing. I mean, he was saying, I'm not a coin guy, and then he blew us away with all the multiple Matrix. And, yeah, his card work was better than the coin work, but the coin work was phenomenal.
Well, the coin work was excellent. I just think he needs to slow down because you're missing so much.
But he's
young. He is, but you're missing so much great magic that's very technical and done well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And he was followed by David Stone, who, again, is this very, you know, kind of lackluster performer. David Stone came on in this thing over him, and he says something, name a vegetable. Yeah. And they name it, and the guy says, carrot. And he takes this thing off, and he's dressed as a tomato. Yeah. He's dressed as a tomato. It was.
He said, "Well, let me get rid of this silly thing," and he pulls that off.
And he's wearing a leopard skin tux jacket. David is just so outrageous and so funny, and yet he is an amazing technician. His stuff is so good, but the comedy is just really what he's trying to sell now.
You know, I want to say something to that is. A lot of times people think, you know, they look at some people like David Stone or some of the other performers and say, oh, he can just walk in the room and he just kills and da-da-da-da. And here's a funny story I'll tell you. So for the piece of Catalina we're doing, I want to make sure that we had the blocking right in that room because it seems like that front row is creeping up. And so you're trying to, you know, make sure that when I walk around or if I have to hide something or whatever, I can do it. So I found a time to go in there. And who's in there? David Stone is in there, and he's doing the exact same thing. He's walking through all, you know, how many steps is it going to take me to go here? How am I going to go here? And I happened to mention to him, I said, you know, it's funny, you and I are in here now walking through our routines, making sure everything is set. But they don't see that. They only think we walk in, and we walk off, and we don't think about anything else. And I said, that's not true. I think the acts that are really good do find secret ways to kind of slip in, find out what's going on, and then slip away. And you don't see that rehearsal part. But there's a lot of rehearsal going on that we don't see. So I want people to realize, yes, even the pros are still coming in knowing there's a lot of pressure here for it.
That reminds me back when Lance Burton first won the gold medal back in 78 or something, you know, in Evansville, Indiana. He went down to the theater and was practicing with the union people, tossing his doves into the spotlight so they'd come back to the stage and, you know, land on the lamppost behind him and everything. But he was there, somebody told me, for up to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, I just want to bring that out, that he kills, but he's still very aware. You got to be prepared and practice. It's not, I think sometimes the younger magicians have to get out of their heads. We're still practicing. We're still looking, being very aware of everything.
And David is a trained actor. So, you know, an actor is going to prepare his stage, prepare himself, make certain that he hits his marks and... Yeah, no, consummate professional. And yet, you know, with all the goofiness and everything, he did a couple of really strong pieces of magic. The thing where the T-shirt appearing, I think nobody was expecting that. Yeah. The card and the lemon, a thought of card and lemon, wow, just nail me with it. And then that ring and tennis ball is just a borrowed ring, vanishes, and appears in a solid tennis ball that he cuts open with a knife. And it's a really good, really good piece. So they give us a little break, and then we came back with J.B. Dumas, very funny young man whose command of English is shockingly good.
No kidding. You, for a moment, you're like, is he French?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
English was so good. Is he just a fill-in? I think he's a ringer.
Yeah, I've been spending time with him, you know, during the week here, and his English is really, really good. But he did a really nice three-coin sequence, Productions Vanishes, really nice stuff. He had a shrinking and growing deck routine that he did, some card selection stuff. nice, you know, just nice personality. And he finishes with this tissue, the cigarette paper thing that turns into a joint. And that was like
came full circle.
Exactly, yeah, because that was a running bit through the whole show, was the production of these marijuana cigarettes, apparently. But he had some surprising, even one that appeared in his mouth. It's just, it was clever.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was fun. It was fun. William Watt from now living in Mauritius. Yeah, comes on. And, you know, William has this style that's like a real kind of laid back. He's a handsome young guy, but he's like, you know, laid back, and I hope this is going to work out. So he gets a guy up, and he sets up these styrofoam cups. He has him play beer pong. Oh, it was Mike Powers.
Yeah.
He's, I'm going to, you know, we're going to play a game. If you get it in the cup that has
drink it.
Yeah, you got to drink it. So he finally gets one in a cup, and they just leave it there. And he's doing a variety of card stuff, and he has a card where he takes a picture of Mike. There's a card, and he can't find it. And they zoom in. He zooms on his camera on the iris of his eye. And in the iris of his eye is a picture of the card. And it's like, holy crap, man. Yeah. You know, this is just...
That was a good one.
Yeah, yeah. He did another one, which is a signed card and a photo. Just really, you know, strong.
Signed card and a photo was very nice.
That was really
good. Yeah, that was very clever.
But then he starts pouring out all the beer into the cup that he selected,
that's right.
And he shows the bottom, and there's different cards written on the bottoms of the cup, and the one that he threw the ball in has the card selected on the bottom. I went, holy cow.
That's a nice full circle routine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well constructed. Mm-hmm. And he kind of really takes you in, because this is mellow, laid back, and all of a sudden at the end, boom, he hits you over the head. It's like, oh, man, he just
good. It's really good.
Remy Robert, who's about to become a father, came on and did a trick called Sensitivity Box, which is this white box where he has somebody reach in and identify what's in the box.
Yeah,
and
Mike's wife, Maria, actually.
Yeah. And every time she says, oh, it's like a toothbrush, he opens up and takes out this big toilet brush.
Yeah.
And he did that. I think there were three phases to the thing. It's a clever idea, very clever idea. And then he had borrowed somebody's cell phone, vanished, appeared in the wallet. And again, he finished with Cardinal M in a really nice version with the torn corner. Looked very, very clean.
The cell phone thing really, I think, surprised a lot of people.
Yeah.
That one really.
He really didn't do any build-up to it.
No.
It's just this thing is going to go, what the heck?
Yeah, I think it took a moment for people to even realize, wait, what?
Yeah. 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 It was kind of a shocker.
I almost forgot about that until you mentioned it. That's right.
Yeah. And then the show was closed by Omak, who's a FISM winner, multi-European award winner.
And given us a lecture yesterday, which was awesome.
Yeah, the lecture was incredible. Just that wow control, amazing stuff. And it's funny, during the show, he's using it in the show, and you can hear everybody going, oh, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's difficult to focus on, you know, one particular thing from the act because he's doing so much. It's a lot of card changes.
Yeah.
Two cards selected, one changed the other, back to the back and forth, back and forth. And the stuff is like rapid fire, and yet doesn't look rushed.
Right.
Doesn't look rushed. I mean, he has just a really good tempo.
This is close-up card manipulation. You know, not the stage thing, but taking two cards and how fast they transposed in his hands was kind of the close-up version of a manipulation act.
Yeah, yeah, or like Flurry.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going through Flurry. It's like the card version of Flurry. But
Flurious.
Flurry. What, you know. Yeah. But
Big crowd pleaser for 4F people.
Absolutely. But I thought that the strongest thing in the act was the card in the glass,
mm-hmm.
where
yes.
one of the cards appears in a glass, just sitting out there, and he puts it back down, and now he turns it again, and now the card's changed.
Right. And it's just one card in there.
And it's one card in there, and it's like,
you know, now, the funny thing for 4Fers is, so when the first card appeared, and it looked like it just appeared in that glass, and that you heard everyone's breath, you know, exhale on that.
Yeah.
And then when he put it down, all the 4Fers, okay, we don't know how. Don't know how, but we know he switched it. And he kind of suckered everyone because I think he realized everyone's going to expect that to be. And it turned out not to be the card we expected. And, you know, in that moment, in my head, I thought, he's already ahead. Because when we were disappointed that it wasn't the right card, he probably did three moves. So it was really fun. It's really fun.
So that wrapped up the shows for the day as far as the formal shows.
Yeah. And then last night was the first night the Italian suite was open.
So, like I said, I turned in early because of my voice, but tell me, I didn't get having your cheese that you brought.
I didn't break those out because we had all of his. No, tonight we're going to do that. But,
okay, good.
Every year the Italian thing is this big suite and everything. This year, Alana's the only Italian that came over. Everybody else had stuff to do. So he could only bring in a limited amount of his liqueurs. There's plenty of bottles there. Not a problem. But, he just has a regular room. But, I got up there and it was packed and I shoehorned my way in, got my but the Canadians, the Montreal Trio, said, oh, we're going to have a corner of the room where we will have goodies from Montreal. So we have maple whiskey and we have cookies and we have these little other sugar treats. And it was just really fun. And just, for a few hours, it's just a nice group of people milling in and out of there. And my gosh, Alain, I don't know how he smuggles his cheese in, but he has just like a great piece of pecorino and a great piece of Parmigiana and some nice Italian blues. And, I told him, he said, well, I couldn't break as much as I brought reinforcements. So last night I said, we've got plenty here. We'll break out my stuff tonight.
What time did you turn it in?
Oh, I went to sleep early. I went to sleep at 1:15. I said,
about
the
same time as you. You might
went
at 1. Yeah.
Yeah. I said, I need to because otherwise I won't make it through today.
Well, that's it. You're going to sacrifice the enjoyment of today if you stay up too late.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, in the early days when I'd stay up till 4 every morning. And it's easy because you've got so much great conversation and so many fascinating people. But I would literally take 2 to 3 days to recover from 4F because you're so exhausted after those 4 or 5 days. And so now I've learned moderation. Be in bed by 1 and you can still enjoy everything. And I'm sorry, even if you stay up till 4, there's people who are going to go, oh, I wish I would have talked to him. I wish I would have had more time here. Not enough time.
Some of those young guys stay up till 6. Yeah.
That's why I like to talk to the people during my podcast so I can go back, because there's so many people here that you'd like to spend some time with, that if I get a chance to chat with them, they can go back and listen to this. So I miss that guy, so I got to hear something from them then as well.
Yeah, and I had conversations with several people last night in the party room about what your 4F experience is now compared to what it used to be. And, every year I'd have my video camera with me, and I wanted to come away with
that, sure.
Yeah, guys were kind enough to teach me things, let me video stuff. I learned some amazing material here that you're not going to learn anyplace else.
No.
You're never going to see this anywhere else.
Or one tip. One little tip could change everything.
Yeah.
And aside from the magic, even take away the magic for a moment, you have nuclear engineers here. You have chemical engineers. You have
titans of industry.
You have people with such interesting jobs that it's very – you can spend an hour just talking, wow, I didn't know anything about – like some guy who – he worked on the formula for Tums smoothies.
Wow.
Yes. You have all these very fascinating people, and now you're going in another direction. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because it gives you ideas.
Absolutely.
From a different perspective. Now, when you're this is – it's almost like, could this be a two-week convention?
No.
You got to sleep.
Half of us would not survive. Oh, my God. It's bad enough. It's 4 days. Come on. It takes us how long to recover?
No kidding.
Yeah, I used to go and take a nap sometimes in the afternoon. I'd learned that many years ago. Yeah. That's the only way you can get through it. But now when I go back to the room, I'm putting this podcast together. So that's
no break for you.
No nap time for me. Okay. So what's happening today? What's on the agenda?
Well, we've got David Stone lecturing at 11 o'clock, and that's always so much fun. And the lecture is as much a show as it is a lecture.
Right.
It's funny.
Kind of like Bob Reed, remember?
Kind of Bob. Oh, we had a long conversation about Bob Reed last night, about when he, at the Quebec IBM back in the 90s, you've got to do 12 minutes. The last room, everybody wanted to be in Bob's last room because Bob did 45 minutes of pure hilarity. And in 45 minutes, he did 2 tricks. That's it.
Yeah.
And the rest was all just shtick and gags and jokes. And oh, my God. That's one of those guys that I really miss. Amazing guy. And the guy was, he was like Jekyll and Hyde because he was a three-way. Because on the first hand, he was the British representative for the wool industry worldwide. This is what he did for a living. Now, you got him. He does this crazy magic act that's full of great magic, but just amazing person. This guy could have been a pro. And then he was the world's authority on cups of balls, not as a trick, as art.
Sorry. Mm-hmm.
And he had the world's most amazing collection of prints depicting cups and balls conjurers, both as art and in satirical satirical drawings and things. And then he had some amazing statuary. I years ago, I'll make you listen a little bit longer. years ago, I was in England, and Bob and Pauline had stayed with me for a few days, and then like 3 weeks later, we were going to England. He said, "Well, you got to come over to the house. You got to see my stuff." I went, "Okay, you know." So they arrived. They got back home like the day before we were leaving. So they picked us up at the hotel, took us back to the house. Very unassuming little house near Wimbledon. I mean, in the suburbs. You walk in, very, you know, with things, and he has these bookshelves with case after custom case filled with these lithographs, and he's going through these lithographs for like 2 hours. It's amazing. And then he starts out on the statue. Amazing piece of statue. I said, "Bob, what cups and balls do you have? What sets of cups and balls?" He said, "I don't collect cups and balls." He said, "I only have three sets." He said, "I have my working set, which is one real cup, a coffee cup, and a paper cup." He says, "I have the set that Harry Stanley made for when Vernon came over and toured in the 60s. And then I have Ho Sensor's cups." Excuse me?
Just kind
of
threw that out.
Yeah, that's that third set he has. Yeah. And he told me the story of how he acquired them, and it was just, oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so then, going on the rest of the day, then we're going to be having?
Right. The Mini World Show is at 1:30. The Fector's Fabulous Frolics at 3:30. And the closing gala at 8 o'clock tonight. So we have a very, very full day of magic.
Didn't Obi also say that Greg Fruin, I believe, is going to be filling in or doing a lecture? What was that he was saying? I thought he said.
Oh, I missed that.
Oh, he said the Greg's the guy right that's in Niagara Falls, correct?
Yes, right.
Okay, well, he was saying that somebody, maybe he's going to be the one filling in for. I haven't seen Michael or Dardant yet.
No, Dardant had an accident on his motorcycle on the way to the airport.
Okay, then I
so
think.
So maybe Greg's going to
fill in. I think Greg's going to fill in for Michael.
Oh, that'd be cool.
So wait, back up. He had an accident on his motorcycle.
Yeah, he was driving to the airport on his motorcycle, and he got hit by another driver. He broke his arm, but he other than that, he's okay.
Oh, I saw a picture on Facebook. Yeah.
Okay. Other than that, he's okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, gosh. So we had a lot of stuff going on yesterday, and then tonight we're going to get back together, same place after the show. We'll try to get back in here.
Yeah, we'll get together.
If you want to join us then also.
I'll try to make it.
I like what Christian has to offer then as well. So that was a recap of then yesterday. Thank you, Mark D'Souza and Christian Painter. Appreciate it for the Magic Word Podcast. We'll see you guys later. Well, as the day has gone on, that we are getting ready here soon this evening to have the final gala show.
Oh.
And one of the people who is on the show is Mr. Paul Gertner, who is here with me. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Hi, everybody. How you doing?
And what number are you that you're on?
I actually did the afternoon show.
So
I went this afternoon or whatever. I just did a spot here this afternoon. So, yeah, not on.
I missed that because.
Yeah, right.
I was laying down. My laryngitis killing me. So I just walked down. So how'd it go?
So it went well. Yeah. You know.
I see you in a coat and tie. I thought maybe you're getting ready for later.
Yeah, no. No, just getting ready.
What'd you do? What was your party?
That's ridiculous. And then did a new little trick I'm working on, that the card routine that it's still a surprise. So the folks got to see it, but. It's, you know, still working on it.
All right. I wish I would have been up to see that, unfortunately. Yeah. Did you close the show then, or what?
I did today, yeah. So they seem to like it.
Well, that's a good thing.
At least.
That's a good thing.
You do your best.
That's right. You know, you got here just yesterday?
Just yesterday, yeah. Yeah, I had a gig in Thursday night.
Because you were in Florida, I think, I saw on Facebook or something.
It was Portland, Massachusetts. Portland, New Hampshire.
Okay, you're in these.
Yeah, I was up in Portland.
Yeah.
And so I just got to see 2 days of the convention, but that's fun. You know, I still enjoy.
I know that Tom Craven is the only other one who's been here for like 49 years.
How many
have you been to?
I think they said 34 times that I've been here, but my first one was 46 years ago. Mm-hmm. So my first one was in 73.
Which is a famous story.
So, yeah, when I hitched. But so that was the first one.
And that was a lot different back then, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And that was still at the Forks Hotel.
Still at the original Forks, sure. Yeah.
Well, good. Well, I'm going to let you go get out of your coat and tie.
All right.
And go enjoy dinner. Thanks,
Sounds
Paul.
Good. Okay.
Okay. Talk to you later. That's Paul Gerdner. Scotty out. So we just finished dinner and the afternoon show, and we are going to be having the evening show here shortly, but also first we're going to be having a tribute then to Mike Powers. I thought it would be kind of cool to talk to somebody else we haven't talked to in a long time because I haven't seen you in a while. Please say hello to Rich Marotta. Hey, Rich.
Hey, how you doing?
So tell me, when was the last time you were here? It had to be 20 years ago?
Maybe 10, yeah, about 10 years ago.
Okay. So what's kept you away for so long?
I had a gig.
It's a long one.
I'm weird. If I get a gig, I'll do a gig.
Well, sure.
If I'm free, I'll come to a convention.
Yeah, so well, that makes perfect sense because it's not that far from the city.
But, well,
you know,
it's getting farther all the time for me.
Well, as you're getting older, it's
six
harder.
Six hours.
Yeah. Did you drive over?
Yep.
Okay. 6 hours to Batavia from New York City.
Right.
So is that right?
Not
okay.
Bad.
So tell me, what is it that you're working on? Anything new or just kind of... polishing the same stuff.
I'm always working on something good. New, but, you know, when push comes to shove, you wind up doing the stuff that's always great and you've always done. And the new stuff, if they're paying me to do a gig, I can't break in my stuff, I don't think.
Sure, that makes sense.
You know, so,
are you doing many comedy clubs or is that
no,
really...
No, I'm not doing comedy clubs. So it's a couple of reasons. One, they don't pay anything. And two... The audience just sees me as some old guy. Who's that old guy? It's a little tougher. Most of the guys are young, and they're all politically correct. Once in a while, I'll do it, but I don't do it as a gig. I just do it to get up there and...
So, well, you know, talk about being just an old guy. Well, they recognize Sam Elliott, and you've got that Sam Elliott mustache.
I don't see him doing stand-up either, though.
You know, but you could play something kind of like that. Maybe they have a gag or something.
At the comedy clubs, most of the people are young, and the audience is really young.
Now, when you say you're not PC correct, and I've heard it said that Jerry Seinfeld doesn't like to wear colleges because he said, I can't do the material.
They tell you what you can say and what you can't do. And when you work corporate, they give you a list of stuff you can't say and do. Corporate doesn't want to offend anybody and get sued. And the campuses is just politically correct. You can't. I almost didn't get paid recently at a Christmas party gig for, I'll tell you, Johnson & Johnson. I do the silk, the egg. When I'm done, I got that little red dot that's supposed to look like the hole.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And I finish the thing. I break the egg, and then I get the dot. I put it on my forehead, and I say, quick impression for you. Hello, tech support.
Yeah.
They got mad at me and didn't want to pay me. They said I was...
Because of that joke.
Yeah.
Wow. That is not as offensive as some other things I've heard similar, you know, where they put a dot on their head.
I said I didn't think I was offending him. I'm saying, look, this guy speaks two languages, and he's a tech guy. He's smarter than me.
Yeah.
Well, you made fun of him. They're just looking for something to bitch about.
Yeah, I think that's true. So what have you seen here at the convention this year that you thought was pretty cool? Or is it just seeing friends? Why you?
You know what? It's one big trick. I've seen...
That's a good point. They all kind of meld together.
It's just one big trick. It was all pretty good. There's, you know, snippets here and there, but it's too much magic for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't remember who did what and who said this. So, but it's fun. It's great.
You're still working over at Monday Night Magic with Michael Chow?
No,
and
I don't work there in all ever.
Ever? Well, wait a minute. I thought way back. I thought I'd work with you.
I haven't worked there in like 10 years.
Okay.
It's the same acts over and over for them, and also I don't, I don't need to showcase. I don't,
sure.
It's like, and I'm not breaking in stuff there because they want you to do your act there. So, but there's a couple of other places I work in the city nobody goes to.
Mm-hmm.
Secret stuff.
Secret things you don't want to share because you don't want other magicians
right,
come out.
And they'll be there too,
lines,
and then,
yeah.
You know. But there are places, if you want to work in New York, you can work. There's a million places.
Yeah. You're keeping busy, mainly around town. You're not really traveling much.
I did a tour of Spain for 3 weeks, and I did a tour of France for 3 weeks at lecture. But I'm getting too old to travel a lot.
I know. I talked to you about lectures, and it was a little bit longer than what you really want to do.
I'd like people to come to my house. That's what I'd like.
Well, then, what I suggest for you is to go to either Penguin or for Murphy's and have them do record your lecture, and that way they can watch it at home,
right.
You know, online or on a DVD.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to do music, I like to perform, but I can't. Traveling is getting too much work. You know, I need a team of doctors to revive me when I get to my destination.
Yeah.
Cuts into the profit.
Yeah, that would cut into the profit a little bit. Yeah. All righty. Well, listen, we're going to carry on. Thank you very much, Rich.
Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to see you. It's for the Magic Word Podcast. That was Rich Marotta. Scotty out. Hello. Okay, this is Scott Wells again for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I don't know if my voice is getting better or not. Maybe it's just me that I'm thinking that it is because I'm talking a little bit more now. Just finished talking with Rich Marotta, and now we're going to go across the pond to talk with Chris Payne. Hi there, Chris.
Hi.
Glad to see you again. You've been attending, like, this is your sixth year?
It's sixth or seventh, yeah.
I'm getting pretty good at guessing this, because I've been here for like 35, and I've seen, you know, people, a lot of people come. And I'm just talking to Rich, you know, it's been like 10 years since he's been here, you know.
Yeah.
So it's great to see some people again. But now that you come every year.
Yep, just missed 1 year. I retired. I worked as a doctor for 30 years, retired at 56, and I've been every year except one since then.
You weren't like Doc Martin, I guess. I mean, you're not afraid of blood, or you know what series I'm talking about.
Well, I'm blessed with an unfortunate surname, really, Payne.
Payne,
I was Dr. Payne, which caused a lot of entertainment for my patients.
So, what's one of the best jokes you'd heard them talk about? You used?
Yeah, it was. I think they were almost too embarrassed to use it to my face, but amongst my friends, it caused quite a lot of amusement. My wife's a doctor, and unsurprisingly, she's kept her maiden name.
Oh, of course, yeah, for professional purposes, obviously.
Absolutely.
There. And what kind of specialty, or was a general practitioner?
I started as a family doctor for 7 years, and then I worked on a national computing project for 5 years, and then I did extra training and did public health for the rest of my career.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever do some magic, you know, for your patients, or I mean, like for kids, or that you did family doctor?
No, I didn't. I kept it very separate. Yeah, I used to do magic for my colleagues, mm-hmm. so the Christmas do, etc. But otherwise, magic went fairly. I did a lot of magic in my teens, Young Magician of the Year.
That's what I was going to get to ultimately, because I want everybody to know that you were the Young Magician of the Year for a Magic Circle. And what year was that?
I think 70? Yeah, I think it was 71. I think I was about the. I think it was 10 years after Johnny Hart was the first, mm-hmm. and I think they're every two years, and I think I was about the fifth or the sixth. I was the first Patterack to win.
Mm. And close-up?
No, that was stage.
Okay.
So I won. I was also the youngest at the time. I was just 15. I think there have been younger winners since then. But, yeah, and then I went on and won the British Ring close-up when I was about 17 or 18.
And have you held an office at the Circle?
No. Funnily enough, although I'm a member of the Circle, I don't get up there that much. I've tried to get up a little bit more recently, but of course now they're videoing everything. It takes some of the incentive out of traveling up to London, yeah.
I like that also, well, you know, because I take advantage of that in the U.S.
Yeah.
by watching their Monday night lectures, too. It's great for us.
It's very, very useful, isn't it? Yeah.
But I hadn't thought about that, actually, that it would kind of reduce attendance.
Quite possibly, because although it's 100 miles from Bristol up to London, travel isn't cheap. It's going to set you back 50 or 100 quid. And it's getting back, actually. Even though they stop at 9, it's quite a trek to get back in time, in a sociable time.
Well, can't you take the tube? I mean, over to the train, then back over to Bristol from there? Or?
Absolutely. Funnily enough, the trains tend to stop running about 10, so it can be quite a rush. It just makes it less enjoyable, yeah.
I remember when I was lecturing at the Circle, they were telling me that very thing. You need to quit by a certain time because people have to get back home and the tube closes, and so you're out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do miss it, particularly since I'm retired, and it's a great, you know, they've got a great body of expertise up there.
Right. Now, their Monday nights are open nights, but are they open the rest of the... I mean, I say open, not to the public, but... is that member night on Mondays, or there's? I think okay. It seems like it. They are open other nights of the week then as well. Mm-hmm. I think as well. So you've been coming then for a few years to this, and you performed this year.
So-called PhD. Yeah, so third performance. So I performed the first year, very nervous like everybody else, doing sort of stuff that I did back in my 20s, sort of cards and coins. Second year, I reverted to slightly more stage stuff. I did the Nemo Rising cards, which got quite a lot of interest and comments.
Yeah, was good.
Yeah. And then I, so unfortunately, I had a stroke and I missed a year. Fortunately, made a complete recovery.
Oh, you have? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I missed a year, and I've been coming back 3 or 4 years, and I was beginning to think maybe they're not going to invite me to perform a third time. So. And I've been developing some new stuff, which I genuinely wanted to share, because the nice thing about 4Fs is that you know that everybody else here is a performer. So I wanted people to at least get a sense of the sort of stuff I'm doing now rather than what I used to do in my 20s.
Well, I thought that Cards Across you did, of course, with different colors and thought of cards, was brilliant. I love the Cards Across theme, and I do that very different variations. Never seen that before. That was very original. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's something I'm very pleased with. So, funnily enough, I got into Cards Across. I have a venue that I perform at, which is the same audience, and I have to perform at least 4 or 5 times a year. So there's quite a lot of pressure to develop new material, which, of course, is the amateur's curse, doing different stuff to the same audience. But I'm interested in presenting card magic on stage. So I've been in search of plots. So thinking, how did Nate Leipzig do it? And this attracted me to Cards Across, which is not quite as commonly performed in the UK as here. I know with Matt King, you know, I went to Las Vegas, so at least 2 performers doing it, including Matt King. And it's never, it didn't intellectually appeal to me. I couldn't see the appeal, you know.
Yeah.
10 cards here going to 7 and the 10 going to 13. But I started to research it. I wanted to do blue and red cards, because I wanted the clarity of the 3 red cards appearing rather than just an extra number of cards. And then I got into, it would be nice if they were thought of. And it's gone through a lot of iterations. I started off with a stack, the usual envelope editions and switches. But I've always had the image of what I'd like to do is just to stand in a suit without any tables or anything and take everything out of my pockets, single envelopes to the right and the left,
sure.
And then get the cards apparently freely thought of.
Yep, brilliant. Really like it. Well, good job, and it's always good to see you over here. And that is this really the only time of the year that you come over to the U.S.?
It is, yeah. That's definitely a habit I'm in.
It's a good habit to get in.
Yeah.
Good seeing you.
Yes,
so with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Chris Payne, Scotty up. All right, well, I'm about to talk with Dan Garrett here, but Chris Payne, just walk by. What'd you say, Chris?
Yeah, I thought Dan did a particularly crisp job this year. Really, really on the ball. It was great.
As the MC this afternoon show.
Well, thank you. I thought my bouquet was subtly demure yet playfully articulate. That's my wine review list.
Thank you, Chris. Let's sit down over here for a second. So, yeah, I'm just getting ready to talk with Dan to find out how things are going, because Dan is a good mate of mine for I don't know how many years.
Oh, and Scott Wells, we're great friends for, I'm not going to say or try to guess.
It's a long time.
Yeah, let's say it's been several decades.
I have always felt like I'm part of the Atlanta crew, you know.
You are an honorary Atlanta crew, you bet.
You bet. Thank you. So I actually missed this afternoon show because of my laryngitis. It was just hitting me, and I had to lay down. I was taking some laryngitis medicine anyhow.
Oh, so I've got to do the whole thing
No,
over
you don't have to. But tell
I wasn't
me.
The show, I was just the MC.
Well, when he was singing, it was particularly crisp. I was thinking, oh, boy, I really missed something really important there. I mean, you always do a stellar job, but must have been today. It was.
I had some new original stuff, and it was never tested out in front of magicians, so I was a little nervous, and I was particularly pleased. Everything seemed to go very well.
Yeah. Do you bring things from home? I mean, you're kind of thinking of writing, or kind of like, you know, Steve and Rick Merrill, you know, who always... You know, pick up ideas here.
Yeah, I do a combination of both. I do stuff from here. Like I had a gag about, I said, we've invented a game this year at 4F, and it's a betting game based on a hustle you can see in any major city. The game is you bet how many times you have to put in your door key before it unlocks.
Oh, that's the craziest thing. Why is
that? It's called Key Card Monty.
I love that because it takes me 3 times every time.
Right.
It turns green.
It was a gag. You know, it was a gag, but everybody got to laugh because everybody experienced it.
Yeah. I thought it was just me. Really. Yeah. They're all that way.
Yeah.
I don't know what's up with that. Yeah, what he's talking about. You put it in, it turns green. You take it back out, put it in, nothing happens. Put it in the third time, it finally clicks.
Yeah, it's kind of like the hokey pokey. I wish I'd have thought of that earlier. Yeah, exclusive to the Magic Listeners. Word podcast.
So where have you been? What are you doing? Where have you been traveling? What's happening in your life?
I'm still working the Magic Castle at Sea cruise ships for Crystal Cruises, as many other magicians. Carol and I both retired now. We're playing a little golf here and there. She plays a lot more than me.
A lot of golf. Yeah, she plays a lot.
A lot of golf. That's true. I wish I played more, but usually the days I want to play golf, I'm either busy or it's a terrible weather. That particular day of all the rest of the week.
Yeah.
It's just the bad breaks. But, so I'm getting along pretty fine, you know.
Good.
For getting old, as we know, that's no fun.
No.
But we're hanging in there. We're still kicking. I still do a few shows here and there.
And lecturing around?
Not a lot of lecturing yet, but I want to start lecturing again. That's very grueling if you do on the tour, and you've done enough tours and organized enough tours to know what it's like.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. What's been outstanding or something that you've seen or learned or saw here?
Oh, gee, there was a good workshop, the Pat Page Memorial Workshop, a couple of really good tricks that can be done in less than a minute, and so that's kind of nice, the get in and out and, leave them speechless. David Abers had a great, a great non-matrix or matrix vanish, where you take out four coins and you put them, throw them under the cards, and you lift up the cards, and they've all the cards have vanished completely, and it's within the reach of all the magicians. But the methodology is diabolical.
Yeah, very clever.
Yeah,
very
clever. You know, I'm not doing anything particular. I'm still hanging in there, still retired yet still performing. Retired in the eyes of the government. But really performing.
As far as Social Security and Medicare, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, you understand. What about you?
I have been keeping busy also during this past year. You know, it was this time last year. Alexandra, if you got a minute, I'd like for you to come over just a second. I'd just like to talk with you then also, just for my podcast here again as well.
Great.
That hold on, because I've had some people sending me emails requesting that if there are some women there, you need to talk to more women. So I would like to talk with
so
you
nice.
Then.
Sure. So I stay around. I stick around.
Okay, hang around for just
talking,
a second.
We're talking Penn and Teller fooler.
That's right. Yes, she is a Penn and Teller fooler.
And a wonderful magical pedigree.
Yes, I know. I respect your father greatly. And so this past year, it was last year that during this that my wife Kathy was in the... And then when I came back home, then she lasted two more days, and then brain cancer had taken her. So,
it's gotta be rough. But I'm glad you're still kicking out there.
Well, it is, and it's because
life
of
goes on.
It's friends like you and people here. This really is a brotherhood, and I feel like it's a family. And that, you know, everybody has asked me how I'm doing and gives me a big hug. And that I come here just so that way that I can feel that warmth of love. You know, of everybody who sees me. You know, every year
that's. Because if you are not positive, life is not going to give you the keys. You have to find them yourself.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, Alexandra, this is the first year that you have actually attended, right? How is it for you?
It's great. You know, the thing I love the most is that it's only close-up magic. Because, you know, I have been to several conventions during my magical life.
Yes.
And
magic since you were two, you said your father had taught you that.
In fact, I started when I was 15, when I went to FISM, in 1998. Mm-hmm. I saw he was there, he performed, he did his famous cups and balls routine. Everybody stood up, and it was just amazing for me. It was a shock. So I saw Lisa Mena, and so I was able to identify myself to a woman, because it's tough, you know, when you are surrounded by men to say, I can be also on the stage. No, how can I? I'm different. So what I love the most here is close up. And everybody vibers for close-up magic. That's great.
Right. It's very intense, you know, certainly. Yeah. I mean, and everybody's got a different angle, and everybody brings an international flavor because, you know, when you live in the same country, whether it's going to be in France or whether you're in Georgia or America or wherever it's going to be, that you're going to just kind of have, it's incestuous from the standpoint that everybody's doing the same kind of magic, and you kind of have an idea on what he's done, but then I see something that you're bringing to the table, it's like, well, I haven't seen that, but here, everybody talks about, you know, these ideas, and they're open and sharing that, and that's what I really love about this. It transcends everything, whether it's going to be age or youth or male or female, religion, politics, whatever.
Absolutely.
There's none of that. You know, this is amazing.
And you can feel this caring atmosphere, because everybody not only nice but caring. I don't have another word other than caring. And this is really important, because in normal convention it's, I'm sorry for my voice. No, I'm sorry for my language, because I will say, in normal convention, it's who has the biggest.
Yeah, penis.
See what I mean? I'm so sorry.
Cajones, okay, yeah.
Voilà. And I am not at all interested in that. Being a female magician, you know? I don't care about that. It's not, I just love magic. I love the personality of the guy on the stage. You know, that's why you're so hilarious. It's great. You think differently, and that's what we need, because your character is nice, it's funny, it's voilà, out of the path.
There's no way you can understand all my American
jokes. No way. But I what I see when I don't understand things, and I, you know, for Steve Bean when he MC'd the gala, I didn't understand everything, because it's really tough on English of American.
I don't think he understood everything.
No, don't copy that. But I see the guy. And that's, I see the personality, I see the nice look in the eye.
If I'm in another country and I don't understand the comedian, I just listen to the audience.
Sure.
And I know if he's good or not.
And you watch the guy, because it's important to be nice and to be nice with people, because if you are not nice, they will feel it and they won't respond.
Well, that's a lot with performing. When you're on stage, you have to break that fourth wall, and you have to be able to empathize with the audience. Where are they going? You have to go with them.
Sure.
Because if you have your own set show and you're doing it and they're not with you, you may as well just be on TV and they can change the channel.
Yeah,
you know?
But that's why it's close-up is so great, because you are next to the people.
Yeah.
You are making a link.
How did you feel when you were doing Penn & Teller? Did you feel a bond to the audience, or was that really tough because of the camera? Or?
No. I was so stressed. Yeah. I had, it was terrible. But I really enjoyed it. You know, it's a time of my life that I really enjoy it. If I was younger, I would just be, on the floor. But, you know, people were far, but very close at the same way. And having Penn & Teller just beside me was very impressive, because it was my when I started magic, my dad has shown me many magicians.
By the way, that's Dominique Duvivier, for those of you.
Exactly, right, Dominique Duvivier. I can't say Dominique Duvivier, I say dad. So it's hard for me to say Dominique Duvivier.
It's hard for me to say dad.
Yeah, sure. So daddy. So showed me many magicians, the most famous, including Penn & Teller. So having them just next to me was so impressive. But that was great. And they were really caring and nice. And so it was just a thrill.
Did you meet them before the show?
No.
That was the first time when they were on stage. Huh?
Yeah. No.
You talked with Johnny Thompson, I guess,
and
Michael Close.
Exactly. But I didn't see Penn & Teller.
Yeah. Well, speaking for all magicians, I don't think we have any problem with the women being in magic. We want more women.
That's for absolutely
magic.
Sure.
Sure. But this is not the first field that comes to mind when you are a girl. You know, I just got up and I would like to be a magician. No. Because now it's changing, because there are more female in politics and more ladies in any. Voila. And magic is going to change slowly, but changing.
You know, I was talking with Carissa Hendricks on the podcast some time ago, and I think it's be sooner than later. I'm going to say 5, no more than 10 years, in which we won't refer to someone as a female magician. They'll just be a magician.
Magician, exactly. Yeah. That's what we were talking about. And I think we should say magician. Why do we make a difference? What's the point?
Right. We don't need the word magician.
Oui, non, exactly.
Not you. Yeah. Not
tout à fait. You are raison. You are right.
Yeah. Well, you do a great job, and it was a lot of fun watching on TV, and then to see it done live, you know, it fooled me again. I don't know how you did it. Don't want to know. It was just phenomenal.
You can have this.
Wait. No, because we have done it, you know, because we wanted to sell it. My dad said he was performing that trick for 40 years. He has invented that 40 years ago.
Wow.
Well, so he said, I think this is the moment to share it with the magic community, so let's sell it. And
why
a friend
put
of us.
Information on the podcast.
Well, I was going to say, tell me, where can I go to buy this?
Okay. It's on our store, you know, Mayette Magie Moderne. It's, by the way, I made just a little digression. It's the oldest shop in the world. Some historian make the research. It has been created in 1808.
Le Double Fond.
Alors, this is the shop. Le Double Fond is the theater that my dad has created 31 years ago.
Wow.
So you can go on www.mayette.com and you can buy this trick, which is called Sib, cards in bag, for a few bucks.
That's a C-I-B-A, yes.
C-I-B. The cards in bags.
Cards in bags, C-I-B.
Where exactly? Yes, here.
That sounds great.
Thank you so much.
Looking forward to it.
I'm so happy.
Well, thank you very much for coming.
No, thank you.
You're going to continue to come back year after year. I got a feeling we'll be seeing more of you.
Oh, wait. I would love to. Sure. Yeah. This is great.
Well, you see, you're the kind of person that Obi loves to have come back because that you're a sharing person. You know, if somebody comes and they've got pet effects or something, you know, and they're not really seen, they kind of hang out just by themselves They want people to come and share, which is why they have close-up pads on all the tables out here.
I like it.
It's kind of like, you know, he's not one of the gang.
No. Oh, yeah, I see what your point. Ah, that's great. I'm so happy.
I'm not sure if Lisa Minna was the first lady to perform it for it.
Bunny. I think it was Bunny.
Bunny Collins and then Lisa. But she was great. I mean, I loved her so well.
Yeah.
I got to work with Lisa last year. Got to learn about her work in the third world and with her.
I just saw Lisa at Johnny Thompson's memorial service. We chatted for a while, and I wanted to talk with her about that, and I didn't have my microphone with me, believe it or not. So it's like we'll have to catch you because she has a fascinating story about what she does.
Really, she does.
Yeah, she's very clever, very subtle, and she doesn't play on her femininity. You know,
no.
Of course, she's a woman, but she has very clever effects adapted to magic for a woman.
And she also has other some great characters she plays.
Yeah, the mama.
Right. She got me with that one good.
Yeah, she did. She did with me,
and
too.
Also a great trade show magician.
Yeah.
Done a little bit of everything. Yep, she has. Listen, thank you, guys.
About another person, but we should be talking more about
you. No. But, you know, I'm very happy that we play off Lisa, that we speak about Lisa because she inspired me.
Oh, yes.
And I love her so much. You know, she's so intelligent.
Yes, we all do, yeah.
So, yeah, you know. No,
a fellow Texan magician, you know.
Yeah.
That's great.
Good. Thank you guys very much. Thank you, Dan Garrett.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you very much.
Can I take your time?
No.
I'm
happy to share.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I've really enjoyed it. And so,
I give
Alexander,
you my business card.
Okay.
So you can send me the link. I would like to hear
I will do that.
All the podcasts. Okay.
I'm coming up on 500, so you got a lot catching up to do.
Okay.
One of my favorites, by the way, is what I had with Dan. And I've got to say, for the people who are listening to this, I highly recommend you go back and listen to what I had with Dan Garrett. It was so good that, let me tell you what happened. For some reason, after I stopped recording the conversation and went back to listen to it, it was out of sync. I mean, like, it would play like 6 seconds, and then it would skip to like another 6 seconds randomly throughout. So I had to go and find a program that would actually go back and reconnect all this properly. And it took me about 12 hours to put the thing back. So for the hour or so.
I had to listen to it all over again.
It was a labor of love.
I loved it, not just because of the time and effort I put into it, because I didn't want that to escape, because that was lightning in a bottle, what you had to talk about. It was really fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Because I like what, you know, some of the stuff we talked about, you know, where it was, you know, we're bozos on this bus, you know, and
You know, lots of interest outside of magic.
Grateful Dead,
that's what I said, you know, this is the personality that counts, that matters the most.
Sure.
Not the magic. In fact, we are all magicians and we share this passion together.
And the friendships.
But, it's what we are that is important.
Yep. All right. And so until later, that was Alexander Duvivier. How do I say it properly? Duvivier?
Duvivier. You said very well.
Well, thank you.
Americans have tough time.
We do.
Oui, you said more.
And Dan Garrett. This is Scotty Housen.
Right.
All right, well, we're getting ready for the evening show, but not only that, for the actual tribute to the guest of honor, and I'm here now with the guest of honor, Mr. Michael Powers. Hey, Mike.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
So glad that you're here. I'm so glad that you're being honored. It's about time. It's great.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. I've known you for a long time. See you here every year.
Yep.
And you and I know the vibe of this convention is such a positive vibe, and it's such a family thing. You know, we all know each other for years and years and years. It's just great.
And the amazing thing is that sometimes we see each other sometimes at the conventions, maybe at Abbott's or wherever else. But when you come to this, even if you haven't seen someone in a whole year, because they might be coming from overseas or something, you pick up where you left off.
Yeah, it's exactly that kind of thing. And, you know, you have a few friends in life, in regular life, that are like that and went to college with, and you just pick up where you left off. And I have dozens of friends here that are like that. And, you know, these are guys that if they're coming through town, they call up and you go, hey, you got to stay with me. You know, it's like a real family thing.
And what I think also is great is the fact that it doesn't matter who you are, what you, male or female, what your politics, religion, or anything.
Exactly.
It's all about magic. And
Absolutely right. Absolutely right, because I have, you know, I'm a political animal, no hints as to where I'm leaning, but we don't talk about that, or if we do, it's a friendly talk.
Sure, sure.
And nothing ever goes in a negative direction.
Right. This really is a family thing, and that's the one thing I hope that when people listen to these podcasts, these daily updates, they get the feeling that, golly, you know, this just is a group of me, like, what, 220 of us, I think?
About right. Yeah, they kind of hold it there because it gets out of control past that. So how many years?
How many years have you been coming?
This is my 32nd year. I think I'm on the list. I'm at the high end of, you know, because I'm old, Scott.
Yeah.
You know that.
Right. Yeah.
So I've been here 31 times. I missed a few years back when I was engaged in some business stuff. I was a teacher, as you know, and I had a computer business going on the side, and I got busy and couldn't come. So otherwise, I'd be like at almost pushing 40 years.
Right.
You'd be about 37, yeah.
Same with me. I think I would be pushing about 40 as well, but I had three different years that I wasn't here. They've all been great, you know, since the Forks Hotel and way back when.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
right.
Harry Lorraine and
All
these old guys, you know, it was so much fun back then.
Have you guys talked about the Forks Hotel and stuff?
We have not talked about this.
Well, let's do you have a minute?
It's your time.
Okay, well, I don't want to go over time. I know that you have some limitations here. But, no, my first year was at the Forks Hotel.
Yeah.
And wow, you know, I mean, here's your going, wow. Gary Kurtz and Jay Sankey were like calling me Mr. Powers, you know, because they were like 18 years old.
Yeah.
And they were kicking butt, of course. It was just mind-boggling. I remember Dave Neighbors destroying the room. I remember Jay Sankey with the balloon trick with the Deco's in the balloon. Nobody had ever seen it before. It's like, wow, this is really incredible stuff going on. And then I lucked out, and Dave Neighbors and I were on the same train back home, so we had like hours of session. And all the
room for the backstage crew and check in tonight's show.
We're back.
Yeah.
That was OB, in case you heard anything back there. But no, it was just a wonderful thing, and you start to get that family feel. And like someone said today, the idea of I want to go to Fechter's once is just a totally the wrong idea. It's like if you go to Fechter once, okay, but what you really want to do is become part of the family, like that you and I go back so far. You want to be in that group that has dozens and dozens of friends here that are lifelong friends.
They really are. And what I also like is the fact that everybody respects each other's experience, their knowledge, and so whenever that we want to share something,
absolutely.
It's like, you know, we're sharing our pet effects that we don't share with anybody else.
That's
even
true.
In your home club, you know.
Yep, absolutely. You know, it's sort of like, would you show me that? And it's very wide open, and there aren't people hiding the decks under the table because they're only you and I get to see it. It's like, no, we're sharing. This is a sharing thing. And if you ask somebody, please don't show that around, they're not going to show it around. There's a lot of trust, isn't there?
That's true. Now, as to the guest of honor, when did you know you were going to be the guest of honor, and how did that come about?
About a year ago. Oh, that's an interesting story. I was bringing laundry up from the basement, and my cell phone rings. So I look, and it's Obi. So I just sit down on the stairs, and the laundry is sitting there, and I go, Obi, what's going on? And he goes, we start talking about stuff. And then he said, do you know who the guest of honor is going to be next year? And I went, no. And he goes, you. I can still hear it ringing in my ear because I was so stunned. Really, this is a very... I mean, I was just like speechless for like seconds.
Wow.
Because I was just like, who is it going to be?
Yeah. You know? And there you were at the laundry holding that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a funny thing. And, well-deserved, certainly.
Thank you.
And you got a new book out, Tesseract.
I do, that's right. Thanks for bringing that up. It's just coming out. It was the first books went out at the convention. I worked really hard to have it ready for the convention, and I only got them in my house 10 days before the convention. It was a close call.
It's brand new.
It's brand new, and I lectured out of the book. I had a lot of sales of the book, so it looks like it's getting off to a good start. So, real quickly, it's kind of mostly close-up magic. There's a few tricks at play to the big group. There's mostly cards because I love cards, but there's tricks with iPhone, coins, ring and rubber band, a business card, paper money. I'm going to do one of the tricks from the book on the show tonight.
Well, I'm looking forward to it because they're getting ready for you here right now. They're,
okay.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
They're going to put some jacket on you. It looks like you're going to get wet. No, it looks like it's for Rocco, maybe.
Thank God.
So with Magic Word Podcast, that was the guest of honor, Mike Powers. Scotty out. All right, well, we're taking an intermission break right now. Rocco is always the one who closes just before the intermission because he makes such a mess, it takes him 10 minutes at least to clean this up. But I'm sitting next to Tom Craven, and Tom has been here for, along with Obi, 50 years. You've been here for 49 years. You've been to every one.
Yeah, that's right.
And you live in Ohio and been driving back and forth. Did you know Eddie Fechter, I mean, before they started having the first one, or how...
I didn't know him before the first 4F convention, no. That's where I first met him.
How'd you find out about this?
Well,
the first one.
My mentor in magic, his name was Jim Lee, very good close-up magician, saw an ad for this close-up convention and said, I'm going to go up. Do you want to go with me? And I did.
Well, back then, as I recall, they had like this little one-inch ad in Genie or something, didn't they?
I'm sorry, yeah.
I think they had a little ad in Genie magazine or something.
It could be. I don't know where he saw the ad, but he asked me to come, and I came, and here I am still.
And you liked it that first year. How did it change over the years?
Well, you know, it changed because the first year there were 30-some people is all. And we sat in the big room at the Forks Hotel. We had some 8-foot tables that were end-to-end, and we all just sat around it. And somebody did a trick, passed a deck of cards to the person next to him. They did a trick, and then they passed the deck. Didn't necessarily have to do a card trick because you got the deck of cards. You could do any kind of trick. But it went around the table, and then people discussed what they saw and so forth. And today, you know, from 35 people or 30-some people to 250-some people. And technology has made a big difference, too, because they limited the attendance. When it finally grew at the Forks Hotel, they limited it to 100. And we eventually, because Obi had so many requests to come, he found another place, and we moved to the
Abbott Brew House.
Abbott Brew Pub, you know, in Orange Park, New York. And we did it there for, I think, 2 years. Obi says 3. He probably knows better than I do. But then once we couldn't do magic for lay people there like we did at the Forks after the first year because they got into line dancing and nobody was seated at tables and they were just out on the floor dancing. So there was nobody to do magic for. So then he ultimately moved it to here.
And it's been here since, gosh, what, about 1990-something?
I don't know exactly. Yeah. Obi would be able to tell you that, but it's been 20-some years since we've been here.
But the Forks Hotel, shortly after we had the last one there, burned down, too.
Well, and then they tore the rest, whatever was left, they tore it down. But we had to leave because the Chinese owners took over after Eddie died, and it just finally, they didn't want us there. And so Obi
never
moved.
Quite the same.
Pardon, no, it never. Wasn't the same, no.
Yeah, well, I never had a chance to meet Eddie Fecker. I think I had started attending in the early 80s shortly. I think he may have passed in the 70s. Maybe.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, he was such a great guy. You would if you looked at Eddie Fecker, you would never think he did magic, the exquisite magic that he did. You would think he was a longshoreman or something like that. He was
a big
burly guy. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a big burly guy. And did he work behind the bar? Or
He did some performing behind the bar. Carl Norman did most of the performing behind the bar, and Eddie just sat in one of the rooms, and people just crowded around him and watched him because he was just a wonderful, wonderful performer.
Yeah, well, the other guys who were there regularly also, like you mentioned, Carl Norman, there were several others. Name some of the people who were there.
Well, Billy Dunn was one of them.
Ed Eckel, I think.
Ed Eckel. There were the guy that presented the one award tonight.
Vic Trabucco.
Pardon?
Vic Trabucco.
I don't think Vic ever actually performed regularly out there, but Harrison Carroll.
Oh, Harrison, yes, yes.
Was one of the people there, too, yeah.
Yeah, over the years that it did certainly change, but... then Obi started inviting international people and then had this as an award that he would present to people who won contests.
The international people are one of the biggest changes that have come about. You know, we had the first couple of years, there were only Americans and Canadians. That was it.
Yeah.
I mean, and then eventually he started inviting these other people. Another thing, too, is the fact that you look at these screens that we're looking at. Those must be 8 feet by 10 feet.
Yeah.
And two of them. And, you know, back in the old days, there were no screens.
Right.
And then they did, when they finally moved to here, they needed the screens because they, as you know, the venue is larger, more people. But they were small, maybe 4 feet by 4 feet or something like that. You know?
Right, right. Yeah, I recall, being upstairs in the Forks Hotel when it was hot and muggy and have to open up the windows even though it was freezing cold and snow outside and everything.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, and one of the traditions down at the Forks was on Friday night. They had a fish fry.
That was great.
It was, yeah.
We go back in the kitchen. That was part of the deal. For $35 and include your registration and also your food and free beer and everything.
And another big change is the first few years there were no dealers at all.
That's true.
And then
Howie Schwartzman had something up there.
A couple of people brought some things. Jerry Menser brought a few things.
Yeah, that's right,
and,
Jerry.
And a couple of Howie Schwartzman brought a few things. And now you look, we must have 20 or more dealers in the big dealer room.
Right. Well, you got more people attending and people who want things also, you know.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it's a full-fledged convention still. You know, this is still pretty unique.
Yes, it is, because the history behind it alone has kept it that way.
Well, thanks for sharing some of the history. I think it's important.
No problem. Well, my pleasure. Yeah. Thanks, Scott.
I think some people who are listening to this need to know that they've been hearing about how important this is as far as being family and people coming together and sharing the way they do, but to know also the history of that. So I appreciate that. And so we'll see you next year for the 50th.
Yep, it will be.
All right.
Hopefully I'll be here.
Both of us. That's right. Hopefully my voice will be a lot better by then. So with Magic Word Podcast, that was Tom Craven. This is Scotty out. Well, here we are, that the convention is officially over as far as all of the planned activities. There are still some late-night parties, and Mark's still got some cheese, and so do the Italians. And so
we've
still got some more to go here. But do you want to have kind of a rundown of what happened over here then today?
Absolutely.
Starting this morning, is that right?
Right, the David Stone Lecture.
Mark D'Souza, by the way, here with Negan, of course. So yes, and so what? You said David Stone? What?
The David Stone Lecture was started off this morning, and a David Stone Lecture is as much entertainment as it is education.
Right.
I mean, he's such a funny guy. And he has great stuff. A lot of it's stuff we've seen before, but it's so enjoyable to see it again.
Right.
And he's always coming up with new uses for a variety of things.
So many variations. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Sean Farquhar. You know, he'll take like three poker chips, and here's an idea. In other words, if something's going to hit. And like with the tool, what do you have, like 100 different ideas or something, you know?
Yeah, incredible. And some of this magic. I mean, I bought two things I already had because, you know, they're great ideas, and they're things that, you know, at some point – they're going to break, and at some point you're not going to be able to get them anymore. So I want them just to put away.
Yep.
They're really good things. So after lunch at 1:30, we had the Mini World Show, which was emceed by Dan Garrett. Had a surprise opening act, Greg Fruin, who has his own theater in Canada, in Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Greg will pop in for a morning once in a while just to see his buddies, but actually got him on the show, and he did a great routine. With color paint samples and stools.
Sure. Okay.
Stools, yeah. And I don't want to spoil the surprise, but it's...
It was a killer.
Killer finish. And
I've heard people say it's one of the highlights.
I think so, and this was the opening act. The effect is, I believe, something that Blake Voigt created, and a very few number of people are able to do this, and he's one of them that bought the rights to it. A young Canadian named Clark Payne followed, who did some very nice card work, Ace 5 production, and he kept going through the rest of the suit, and then the entire suit changed to match another selected card. So that was a nice routine. Rich Murata followed him, who's Rich is a top comedy club worker for many, many years, and he had one of the best opening gags, which really brought new meaning to finger flinging. At the Finger Flinging Frolics, very funny bit. And he did his classic fishbowl production, which got a big laugh because some of the water spilled on the table, which Obi doesn't want anything spilling on that table.
Right.
So it's pretty funny. And that led into another gag later in the act where he had a prediction sitting out there, and he opens the prediction and says, won't be invited back to 4F. So that was very funny. John Hinton. Followed Rich, and John was on Penn & Teller Fool Us, did some great Rubik's Cube magic, completely different than the stuff we've seen. He had a blank cube to colored cube and a cube changing to Skittles, and he just had some really, really fun material. And he finished with his version of the story deck, like Diamond Jack or Sam the Bellhop, but he had a completely different story, and I thought it was terrific. I really liked it a lot. King of Nakashima from Japan followed, who did one effect, which was a color picture duplication that I have no idea how it worked. I think this thing was a real fooler and a very clever idea. Another Japanese magician followed him, Hiro Sakai. Hiro is just a wonderfully creative magician who is actually a fairly well-known TV star. He has a character that he does on Japanese TV called Dr. Leon, but we got the real Hiro Sakai. And he did a really nice card through plastic bag penetration, and then a very original three ropes. And it looked like he was going to do Professor's Nightmare. It was three different size ropes. They changed to the same size and then changes to a single rope, but it's not the commercially available one. This, he passes that long rope out for examination at the end. So that's...
It's a killer.
Yeah, yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. David Regal, who was poked at... was not the brunt of jokes tonight, but kind of the punchline to the jokes from his from his lecture. But David did... Very nice. He's got great jokes and so much energy. It's like almost immaterial, the tricks that he does. But he did a really good double card revelation. And that first show was finished by Woody Aragon, who did a beautiful cards across with a red deck and a blue deck. And the conditions were, you know, kind of impossible looking. And Woody is always so much fun to watch.
Indeed, yeah.
So the that was followed. There was a little break. And then the 3:30 show, the Fechter's Fabulous Frolic Show, would normally have been... emceed by Michael Dardant, who injured himself coming to Fechter's.
Well, he didn't injure himself. He happened to be in an accident.
Well, yes. Yeah, he didn't injure himself. Someone else injured him.
Yeah.
But fortunately, it sounds like it was not as bad as we had first heard. So Michael's doing okay. And if, Michael, you're listening, shout out to you. We miss you, buddy. Thanks. But, you know, hopefully you'll be here next year. Sean Farquhar took over, and I was waiting for Sean Farquhar to do the Michael Dardant impression, which he did because he came out progressively injured. So he had his finger bandaged, then he had his hand bandaged up, and then his arm in a sling, and his other arm in a sling. It was a funny gag. It was a funny gag. For those who don't know, Michael Dardant does a killer Sean Farquhar impression. Absolutely funny. So this was Sean's revenge on him. The show was opened by Sean Dunn. He did something unusual. It was really not a magic trick. He did a 20-object memory test where he had Joe Reinfleisch write down 20 different objects prior to the show. He looked at them for a little bit, memorized them, and then they would call out. He would call out a number. He would tell them what object was at that number, and then he would then he recited them all backwards. Eric Tate, who won IBM last year, the IBM close-up convention, the IBM close-up competition, I should say. And, boy, what a funny guy he is.
Yeah, he is.
I thought, great character, and he did some beautiful magic. His card work is he did a four-ace routine that was just, like, totally baffling. Mm. Absolutely great. And then he followed that with a three-card Monty routine that he did on the Penn & Teller show, and he's improved it since then even. Another U.S. guy, Jason Michaels from down in Nashville, followed him and did a single effect, a beautiful ace and king transposition. But Jason is one of the guys that's helping to book all the talent for the House of Cards down there, new magic restaurant bar.
It was the House of Cards.
Yes.
But I understand that Joey Martinez actually has taken over that responsibility as of recently.
Booking talent.
Yeah, because Joey had come in, as I understand, as a general manager, and Jason has been doing a lot of traveling and everything, and so it decided that it'd be better that if Joey handles it. I was riding with him on the airplane, and he was explaining this to me. So.
Well, for those who want to know more about the House of Cards, go back to the previous Magic Word podcast, where Scott did a wonderful podcast from the House of Cards, which was fun. Willie Monroe from Spain, who was always fun to watch, came out and did some of his amazing yo-yo work.
Yeah.
And then he did a little gag thing with a cut-and-restore yo-yo string. And he finished up with a card appearing on a yo-yo. He has a card selected. All the cards are thrown in the bag. There's a shower of cards out of the back, and the yo-yo is kind of like flung down into it, and it catches the signed selected card. I thought that was pretty fun. Another young guy from the USA, Jaffo, came on. Again, Jaffo was another guy that was on Penn & Teller Fool Us. He didn't fool them, but boy, he does some nice magic, some beautiful coin stuff. He does coin productions from the Silks. Multiple coin productions, and he finishes with a piece that came out of Bobo Harrison's coins to coins to pocket, where he puts a glass in his pocket. And the coins, they audibly appear in the glass. And I think that's such a great trick. And he's one of the very few people I've ever seen do it. He was followed by Ludovic Juliot from France, who did a small linking ring routine, but this was a five-ring routine as opposed to the usual four-ring routine.
Like a ninja rings or just... Okay.
It's the same size as ninja rings, but a totally different kind of routine. Mm-hmm. And it was a very nicely done routine. Pretty cool. He was followed by Greg Chapman from New Zealand, who's written a couple of books on some fairly technical card magic, and Greg did a routine that was a combination of pseudo-card counting and card memory. Leechi from Japan followed him, and he did several routines with dice and cards, and they would roll the dice and card, you know, that number of cards was cut from the pack, or cards would appear at that number. It was a multi-phase thing, but it followed that theme. Paul Gertner followed him to close the show and did his classic That's Ridiculous routine with the cards and the coins from his book, Steel and Silver, and then did a new routine that he hopes to do on Penn and Teller.
Kind of wants to keep that secret, I think.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, this was one heck of a card trick. He fooled me. It's a pick-a-card trick, and that's all I'm going to say, because pick-a-card has a very strong meaning to this effect. So we have the traditional dinner at the hotel, little break, and then the closing gala, which just ended. That was about a three-hour show.
I feel like I'm in Blackpool.
Well, yeah, but at Blackpool they have a show after the evening gala.
That's true.
Yeah. I had the good fortune to be on one of those after gala shows. Wow. Oh, my gosh, that's just crazy. Anyway, Joan and Obi emceed, and the opening act was Higuchi and Nakamura from Japan, and I think this was pretty much of a surprise to everybody. I don't think anybody was expecting this act, and boy, was this different.
It was very different.
It was one heck. Basically, it's a student and his teacher, and the teacher is trying to coach him through doing a coin routine. And just everything constantly goes wrong, and then things just start happening in the courses. And it's surprise after surprise after surprise.
And you say going wrong, it wasn't like in a comical way. It was a magical way. It's like he hands him four cards and he only counts three, or whatever. I mean, things
but
happen
it's
magically.
But it's very much a comedy-based routine.
Exactly.
But the magic was all strong magic.
Yeah,
so that was fun.
Like I was watching an anime, some cartoon or something, the way that they looked and the music that was playing in the background, everything was beautiful, well done, well constructed.
Very fun.
And they were the first one of the standing ovation.
First standing ovation. Yeah. First act, first standing ovation. That's not bad. Wang Yu from China followed, who does a lot of television over there. He started with a really cool effect with a clear teapot, a couple of bottles of water, and a can of iced tea. And he had the bottles of water poured into this clear teapot, and it was held by someone else, and he held up this can of iced tea and gestured, and suddenly that clear water turned into iced tea, and he opens up the can of iced tea and pours out clear water. So and he offered to show anybody who wanted to learn it how it works, and it's really scientific kind of thing, but it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. He followed that with a couple of card effects, which finished with the production of cards that said 4F on it. But I thought his opening was stronger than his card work.
He has a nice presentation and the way he presents himself to the audience, and also, exactly. I mean, like you said, it's on television, so he really knows how to speak with an audience.
Great presenter, yeah. He was followed by Joe Tsu. Spelled H-S-U, I think it's Sue, but he never said his last name, he just said Joe, from Taiwan. And he did an act with a dice cup and dice that was just incredible. And, you thought he was going to do dice stacking, and boy, that's where it began. And he stacked dice, and they disappeared. Stacked dice, and they changed colors. He produced a glass from the dice cup that was bigger than the dice cup. And he was stacking, dice appeared in the clear glass. It was just magical moment after magical moment. You just, it was so rapid fire, and it was great.
And at the end, he actually stacked twice as tall as what the cup was.
Exactly. He stacks, he lifts it up, he's got, you know, five dice, and then they keep going and going and going. I had no idea.
And he knocks them over. I mean, they're all individuals.
Oh, they are.
They weren't stuck together. Yeah.
No. It's not like
Who would think you're going to be getting Zachary, exactly. Yeah. It was, who would think you were going to be giving a standing ovation to dice stacking, but he got it.
He got it. Boy, great. Did he ever. He was right. They were right up. We got a real change of pace after that. Lucy Darling, Carissa Hendricks from Canada doing her Lucy Darling. And what a great act this was. Mm-hmm. Absolutely superb. She just has such a great handle on this character, and the character is wonderful. And she just, you know, pokes fun at people, and it's just lovely.
And the Academy of Magical Arts is going to be having their annual banquet this coming weekend, and that she is up for the
Stage Magician of the Year. Yeah, and boy, I would love to see her win that. Yeah. Just phenomenal. And she did two tricks. She did the production of a book out of a bag. Which
that's her own original
impossible.
Idea, by the way.
Yeah, which she teaches in her lectures.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then she did her chop cup routine, which is done with a cocktail shaker, with lots of little wonderful moments and great surprises and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she got a standing ovation as well. How wonderful. You know, really, really nice. And Sean Farquhar followed her. And Sean's thing is, for the last 10 years or so, he's on the show every year. And the day of the show, he goes over to Target with $20 and buys and creates an act. it was real fun. He cheated this year, he said, because he did Axel Hecklau's Rubik's Cube, but with an original blow off that I don't want to spoil, because he should be able to use that for a while before everybody steals it.
Well, some of these ideas that he comes up with, he actually develops and actually goes into something, specifically the Sherlock Holmes book test
right. He
did with David Stone here as a gag. And then he thought, you know, actually I could have this printed up and make this into a real trick.
Absolutely.
And it's awesome.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's great. But then I think he did a gag based on something George Iglesias did the other night that was strictly a gag thing. Mm-hmm. But then he did a routine with reading glasses in envelopes. Four sets of reading glasses and four envelopes, and the fifth envelope, he didn't have another pair of glasses, so he borrowed Mike Powers' glasses and put them in there, and basically had, you know, envelopes eliminated by Mike, mm-hmm. and he stomped on them, and the last envelope had his real glasses, and it looked pretty clean to me.
Yeah,
I thought it was a real nice routine. Rocco Solano followed to close the first half, and I call Rocco the Salvador Dali of magic. He is just, you know, just works on a totally different level. I mean, the stuff is just really abstract kind of stuff sometimes. But he did something different here this time. He had a clear jacket on a stand, and he had a table full of his props. And he loaded this clear jacket.
Say clear jacket. It's got, I'm thinking like of a raincoat. You know, it was like a plastic, clear plastic raincoat kind of a thing.
Well, no, it was a clear plastic sport jacket that he had specially made for this.
With all the pockets.
Exactly. Yeah. It was
and
like
magnets and everything. In there.
Exactly. So he loaded everything up and put this thing on. He moved the stand and the table out of the way, and then he did the act.
But the audience got a chance to actually share in watching him prepare the show, and then he did the show.
And the amazing thing is that you watch him put all this stuff in his jacket, and you never see it coming out.
Yeah.
His misdirection is so phenomenal that you don't see the steals. I mean, it's really, really, it was a very clever idea to mm-hmm. do here. Not something you could do for an audience of laymen, certainly.
Yeah.
But it was special for us, and he certainly got a well-deserved standing ovation.
Right.
So after they cleaned up the mess.
15 minutes later, yeah.
Yeah, we had Mike Powers open the second half. Who did a nice ace discovery and did a very clever routine with the bills and envelopes and a selected card. And I'm sure it's in one of his books. But this is a very commercial item. Very nice. There were a couple of Spaniards that followed him. First, Pierre Raffart, who I'd not seen before and not heard of. And he did a great act, very visual kind of thing, where he brings out a deck of cards and takes out what apparently is another deck of cards, but it's a card case coming out of the card case, and he just kept producing
card decks of cards
out of the case. So kind of a funny gag thing. And when he starts in, the card pips begin falling, and he shows, and the card pips on the cards move from one side to another, And, I mean, this was kind of like the running thing. It was really a very visual act, and he ends up with the pips falling off the cards, and then he vacuums them up with the deck. They got an amazing reaction.
Yeah. I was to the side, and I couldn't see anything. It fooled the heck out of me.
Oh, my gosh. I was in front, and you couldn't see it, how it worked. It was really clever, really clever. Another standing ovation. He was followed by Adrian Vega, who's performed here a few times. Adrian's a full-time pro, works a lot of cruise ship work, and he's extremely entertaining. He does a thing where he tears the card into pieces, and you think he's going to do Torn Restored. However, it's three fly. And as the pieces fly from one hand to the other, the card restores piece by piece. Very nice idea, and it's in his lecture, and it's pretty cool. He started off, though, with his named card revelation where he does a gag with his fingers, but he's got a folded card in his hand, and he has somebody name a card, and that's the card. And there's no stooge.
That's in his lecture, too. It's called My Opening Trick.
Exactly.
And it is. I use that. That's a great trick.
Oh, it's a great trick. It's a great trick. He followed with the card and bottle, which is a real fooler. Mm-hmm. Great
signed
trick.
Signed
card and bottle. And I was just watching because he did it with Paul Gertner. And Gertner just keeps looking at this bottle. He's like scratching at it. And nothing there. I'm sure sooner or later he'll put this thing out. When he lectured at my house, he tipped it. And he told me here this week, and he said, your place is the only place I've ever taught this. So we're all supposed to keep shut up about it until he releases it. Bill Chung, FISM winner from Austria, originally from China, followed with an act that's just like, the only thing I can compare it to is like something Del Rey would do. Mm. It's just impossible card magic. The stuff that happens, you really have to see that. It's indescribable, but like signed cards visibly appear in a stem wine glass in front of you. Named cards rise out of another deck in a stem wine glass. You just name a card, it rises up out. It's absolutely impossible stuff. And he finishes up with with four signed cards that disappear and appeared in a sealed deck in a case that's been sitting in full view the entire time. And then all the decks that he's been using all turn blank, like he's going back to the beginning. And it's just absolutely astounding act. He was followed by another Spaniard, Luis Olmedo, who did possibly one of the most beautiful matrix-based routines I've seen. He began with a leaf from a tree and produced four coins from the leaves. The leaf changed to four cards, and he did just this very slow, deliberate, and poetic matrix-type routine that had several phases, and yet it was very different-looking than any other matrix you've ever seen.
Well, one of the things that impressed me, I guess, that made me start to think again out of the box, because he had them lined up in a row as opposed to the four corners.
Exactly, you know? And he did at one point a sequential matrix where the one coin would pass and go to the second position, so you had two coins. He would cover the two coins, and both of those would vanish and appear with the third coin. So now you had three coins, and finally all three coins vanish and appear in that fourth position.
Beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely great.
Another standing ovation.
Absolutely, another standing ovation, and well-deserved, beautiful, poetic act. And the show finished with Steve Bargatze, or I should say Nate Bargatze's dad, and Rick Merrill, who every year do their show is a recap of the convention.
Yeah.
And it's all basically, you know, tearing up everybody from the convention. And they made, you know, particularly focused on making fun of all the MCs this year.
Yeah.
And it was just all in great fun. It always is. But they were in rare form. And one of their big bits this year was telling you how to perform for your first time at 4F. And
like a little mini TED Talk.
Exactly. It was a parody of the TED Talks that Christy and Catalina do. So that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. So that's it. That was the closing. And the show was over about half an hour ago. And now we're ready to go party.
And so now we can have some cheese and some limoncello maybe or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll go enjoy that. So I'll go put this podcast to bed. I couldn't have done this without you in so many ways, particularly since I think my voice is starting to kind of come back.
It's sounding a little more normal now.
It's starting to be, I guess, a little bit. But be better in a few days. But I couldn't have done this without you, I tell you. Mark, thanks very much.
Well, it's my pleasure, Scott. Always, and it's always great to see you and get to spend time with you at the convention. And this is a convention. I got to say, Vectors has like this mystique around it. And it's because, you know, it's an invitation-only convention. It's not like something that everybody can go to. Invitation-only. And they gather 250 of the best magicians from all over the world. But every year, there's different guys. So you're always getting to meet new people.
Right.
And
it's not the same 220. You know, it's a different mix.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So there's a core group of guys that you'll see every year or every other year.
Right.
And then sometimes you don't see them for 3 years, and when they're back, it's like they never left. And you pick up right where you left off for the last conversation you had. And, you know, like we were talking earlier, you know, at first when I used to come, it was all about, oh, I want to learn this trick, I want to learn that trick. And by this time, it's like, I really don't care if I learn another trick or not.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about catching up with the people and spending time and, you know, it's family. It's,
you know, that's true, because a lot of people don't even go into the shows, and they're not, and they close the dealer room, but they're out, you know, in the lobby, in sessioning and talking to each other.
Absolutely.
And they don't necessarily go to dinner, although dinner is included with this. They'll go out to some of the restaurant to spend some intimate time, you know, with their buddies or, you know, our buddies.
So. Yeah, yeah. So it's always great to come here and spend time with people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's I would say, you know, people that are qualified can come to FISM. They need to be Vectors. They need to be recommended by two present attendees of Vectors. But, you know, it's not all about, ooh, you know, it's the greatest magicians in the world. No, it's about guys that, you know, when you come to Vectors, it is assumed you have achieved a certain level and have a certain amount of dedication to magic. Mm-hmm. You may not be the greatest magician in the world, but you have that kind of dedication, and people share with you willingly, and it's wonderful. So, if, you know, everybody makes 4F what they want it to be.
You know, usually I talk with Obie to kind of reinforce how people can attend this, and even though it is invitation only, you can get an invitation, and you had touched on that certainly, and that is that you have to have two people to sponsor you who have been attending, and so those people have to actually write an email then to Obie, but the important thing is that you yourself have to send something, because a lot of times that's a follow-up, is that like two guys have sent me an email, but I haven't heard from so-and-so. I mean, how do I know that you're just not wanting to come, and he really doesn't care about coming? So that person, if you really want to go, you need to also follow up after those two people have sent that recommendation.
Absolutely.
And then after it's over, after your first time, you're required to send an email back to Obie to say, you know, what your experience was, what you thought, et cetera, because if you don't do a follow-up, you may not be – well, you won't be invited back for the second or future years.
Right. Either, so. Correct, yeah. And, you know, there's certain people that, you know, have been here for a very, very, very long time, and you know, people kind of like – you know, kind of standoffish from them. They're like afraid to go talk to themselves. And this convention's not like this.
Right.
Anybody can talk to anybody and hang out with anybody. Right. And most of the people that, you know, when you see them perform on a show, you know, this is a place that's a safe haven. So they want to hear what was good, what was bad, and if you've got any criticism for them, this is what they want, because this is the safe haven. This is the
which is a good thing, going back to Paul Gertner, which is why he's doing it here, to get those kinds of first of all, get to get some flight time with a trick that he wouldn't be doing.
Absolutely.
You know, in the real world yet, until that he kind of gets it down. But he wants to get some suggestions, I'm sure, from the magicians, you know, and also to kind of get over some nervous parts or whatever. So.
Yeah, and nerves is certainly not an unusual thing here, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only relate, the first time I performed here was like right after, you know, one of my contest wins. And when I came out, I started a trick and screwed it up. And I said, excuse me, I need to start that over. And I just looked out and I said, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. And I've been competing for, you know, the last 20, 30 years. I've never been so nervous in my life.
Yeah.
And everybody laughed and applauded, because they all knew exactly how I felt, because they were there.
I had a similar situation, which I was doing a card trick, and partway through I could see, oh, this is not going to work. And I'm looking at the front row, being as close as you and I are, you know, there's Paul Daniels, and he's looking at me, you know. And so I start the thing over. And the next day when he was giving his lecture, he was talking about this very thing, is whenever that you do something wrong, you just got to start over. And he kind of looked at me, don't you, Scott, you know.
Oh, it's, you know, it used to be, I mean, look, it's a very intimidating thing. Yeah. When you come out there for the first time looking at what they call the front row, and the front row is reserved for previous guests of honor who were in attendance. And the first time I came up, I'm standing out there, and I'm staring at Billy McComb and Ali Bongo and Pat Page. I mean, just those three alone, that's enough intimidation for you.
Easily, sure.
Yeah, and then you put Johnny Thompson in the mix, and it's like, oh, my God, if people joke, if a bomb ever dropped on this place, magic would be over. The brain trust of magic is gone.
Yeah. Well, until next year, this is going to be – I'm going to wrap it up over here.
So. Good. Scott, again, pleasure to see you, and hopefully we'll see some of you here at a Future Factors.
That's right, and you know how to get in then now. And I hope you enjoyed this. This was an overly long episode, but it kind of makes up for everything. We kind of also hear about everything that happened. I hope you enjoyed the color commentary then that Mark has given. And so I thank you again very much, Mark, for doing that. And also to the conversations I had in between. Please forgive my laryngitis, and so I'll get better in future weeks. So thank you guys very much. So for the Magic Word Podcast, I'm from Batavia, New York, and the 49th OB's 4F convention, Fector's Finger Flicking Frolic. That was Mark D'Souza.
Mark out.
And Scotty out.